You're listening to The Cultural Hall with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel! Give us land to live righteously!
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, episode 45.
45.
You know what that means to me?
Middle age.
Yeah.
That
is exactly what that means to me.
We're going through midlife crisis right now.
A little bit. We're trying to identify who we really are.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're getting a sports car.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I just got a fancy new haircut and a leather jacket.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Actually, neither of those things are true.
No.
No, I have the same boring haircut I've had for a little while now. But I did shave my mustache yesterday.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh.
I was starting to get the like gross kind of mustache.
Mm, it's like all patchy.
Right.
That's
well,
weird.
No. My mustache grows in like mad, but it's like you'd find me on a registry online kind of mustache.
And
it's like,
is it like flesh colored?
No. No.
You know, like the flesh
what, my,
colored.
Oh. No, it is not.
Well, you're
I'm a ginger, right. Yes. I'm a little bit of a redhead. No, it grows in actually pretty kind of auburn-ish.
Interesting.
If I were a mustache guy,
yeah,
it'd be a good-looking mustache.
Really?
But I just can't rock. I just can't rock the mustache. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could do a beard. I love the beard.
Really?
Can't do the mustache.
Hmm. Well, I'm actually just surprised that it's not flesh colored.
Really?
Yeah. It's just good.
See, I get really patchy kind of on the sides.
Yeah.
Not that anyone wants to know about this at all.
Mm-mm.
I get a little patchy on the sides. I can do some decent sideburns coming down, but like right here, middle of the cheek between the back of my jawbone and like my chin, nothing. It's just bad. And if I grow it out on the neck, it starts to look like tropical storms with the calyx that are on my neck. Seriously.
This conversation is
like you could tell the weather.
Going nowhere.
Neck. Nowhere and quick.
Yep.
Did I already mention it's episode 45?
You did, because we talked about being middle-aged.
Oh, yes. Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure I got the number out.
Yeah,
so
good.
People know it's referenced. That's
yeah,
all.
Right. No, that's good.
So the other part of what that means is, and I'm kind of getting excited for this, episode 52, that means we've been doing this 1 year.
Yeah.
And I'm getting anxious because I think what I'm going to do for episode 52, because I kind of get a pick a
right.
little bit.
Well, you're kind of in charge.
No, I mean.
You pretend you are.
No, I pretend I am. I'm gonna be interviewed for episode 52.
Who's going to interview
you? I don't know. I want it to be, I think that you should be there.
Right.
I think that Rob should be there because he's known me for a long time. But it is going to be a, you know, about all, tell all.
Can it
all
be a free for all?
Free for all.
Because there are a lot of questions that people have about you.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a great idea.
Yep. And I will talk about everything. But also, I've promised my mom that she will be an episode before 52. I told her
episode
that she would
50?
Be episode 50.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to figure out how to do that because my mom was a member of the church for her entire life until probably, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago now.
That's been a long time.
It's actually probably only been about 15 years.
Okay.
Now that I think about it. Because parents got divorced and then she didn't end up leaving the church. But so there's that whole take.
Right.
And so it'll be interesting.
Is she kind of private?
About it? No, she's very
Okay.
No, she's very open about letting
awesome.
You know how she feels about the church.
Good.
So
I like it.
Yeah, for better and for worse, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm sure.
In this.
Yeah.
But I can't decide whether or not to package it and have to give kind of an insight to be like, okay, so here is one side of the divorce and then have my dad be the other half of that episode.
Really?
Or just do it with
that
my mom.
That could be problematic.
I wouldn't have them in the same room. It'd
right.
be like we do an episode and do 30 minutes with my mom. And then do 30 minutes with my dad. And then have people be like, oh, so that's why.
And your dad is still.
He's hardcore.
Okay.
He's
still active.
Going every Sunday.
Yeah.
He's been in the stake presidency. He's been the, you know, this, that, and the other thing. He's just true to the faith.
All right.
So that's, I don't know. That's kind of tempting, but that's where I'm at. But I wanted to tease that as we look forward and let people know that we're going to be doing a birthday
celebration.
Going to have a party somewhere.
Can't wait.
So put that on your calendar in 7 episodes.
Yeah.
That's 7 weeks. That's
yeah.
enough notice.
No, that's plenty of notice.
If only we knew
Maybe.
What we were doing.
Yeah, we don't even know where it's going to be.
Right now,
or
we're not that good at that.
No.
Coming though.
Yes.
But we don't right now. Yeah. So you were telling me that on one of the episodes of the podcast, you found a pretty interesting comment.
I did.
You wanted to talk about it. So
yeah. So on the Kendall Wilcox episode number 42,
Kendall Wilcox, for people who don't know, is the professor from BYU, openly gay in the episode. It's a pretty powerful episode. He talks about how, you know, he kind of came to the edge of his life and he decided to, instead of ending his life, to choose to live. And he talks about how just kind of everything with what it's like to be openly gay and still want to be a part of the church and everything like that.
Right.
So,
and he also talks about an organization at BYU. It's not a BYU sanctioned organization, but BYU allows them to meet on their campus, and it's for the LGBT community. And Sarah Robbins comments on this episode and said, "Secret combinations alive and well on BYU campus. I love how the LGBT community who believe in Christ have decided that they can put a limit on the power of his atonement." Mm-hmm. So I think this discussion could be twofold, but I actually, she says secret combinations and uses the term secret combinations.
Sure.
And I wanted to talk about that in reference to this organization at BYU.
Okay.
Do you believe this organization at BYU is a secret combination?
Well, okay. So let's look at it.
Right.
It's kind of like that whole thing for me where it's like, is the Mormon church a cult?
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How would you respond to that question?
I would say no.
Okay. And I would say yes.
Okay. I can absolutely see right? why you would say yes.
Right. But I think any religion is a cult. Right? It's a group of people who follow a system of beliefs and
right.
are accordingly. Now, I don't think that we're I would never go around saying, "Oh, hey, yeah, the LDS Church, that's a cult and this is a terrible thing," because I don't believe that. But if by looking at
by definition
of a group of people who believe and adhere to a certain belief pattern that they become a cult, yes, you bet. But so are the Catholics, and so are the Jehovah's Witnesses, and so are the anyone, and not even necessarily religionists
right.
of sorts.
Scientologists.
To me, all kind of fall under that same definition.
Okay.
So in that definition, yeah, I mean, there are a group of people who have meetings who, I don't know, maybe secret combinations. I mean, what you're feeling, no, obviously.
Yeah, I do not believe that this group should be identified as a secret combination.
Okay.
Because, I feel like it's kind of like this conspiracy theorist thing too. I think sometimes when people talk about secret combinations, you kind of get into conspiracy theories, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like secret combinations are, is well, and I think it's...
Shh, Rob, unless you're going to join the episode.
Rob just walked into the room and he's...
With a Quiznos, which is my favorite part.
Good.
He's got this loud, it's like this. I don't know if you heard this in the beginning. He's,
yeah.
Oh, am I going to eat my sandwich?
I know, and
this
sandwich sounds
well, I didn't want
like
to interrupt.
Smells so
yeah,
good.
I didn't want to interrupt.
But here's my sandwich.
Rapper?
What? Sorry. Well, I was going to say to you, I think anything that kind of undermines the church... The church is what the church wants to do. So people that are trying to destroy the church, I would say secret combinations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is a support group.
Exactly. It's not. These aren't a bunch of people seeking power.
No.
They're not seeking any type of power. They're just seeking support from each
right.
other.
Right.
And they all still want to adhere to the values of the LDS church.
So do you think it would be bad if there was another minority in the church? Like, let's say... There's a group of Tongans that want to meet at BYU.
Right.
Is that a secret combination?
And I would say that most people would say no.
Right. So they are a minority. This is a minority that wants to feel accepted, find people of their own, so that they know that they're not alone. And that's not a secret combination.
Mm-hmm. I quickly wikied
secret combinations. Okay.
And it says a secret combination is, and we all know Wikipedia
one,
is something
two.
That we
oh,
should,
yeah, sure.
you know,
Let's
that we should
that
take
as a reference.
That we should take to heart and quote.
The end all be all for
yeah,
us.
Yeah. It says it's a secret society of people who, quote, are bound together by oaths to carry out the evil purposes of the group.
Now, I do not agree with this, but some people would say, okay, well, being gay is an abomination.
Sure.
So it's evil. So now does this make it a secret combination?
I don't think so, because I don't know that there's any sort of oath.
Well, when I went to their meeting, we did this handshake.
Yeah. yeah. And there was blood and a goat.
Yeah.
Well, and then this is another thing I would say. So there are a lot of LDS church members that were Masons.
Mm-hmm.
Are Masons, is that a secret combination?
Well, but that's a different thing because within the Masonic rites, you take an oath to not share information. So,
and they're not evil.
Yeah, well, and they're not evil, but they are secret and they do
right,
take an
exactly.
oath. So where does the line
where do you
split,
draw
right?
the line?
Hmm? Hmm? Mm-hmm. Quiznos, where do you draw the line, pal?
Yeah, it depends on your definition of evil, right?
Right.
Evil is relative.
Is it?
Well, it's relative to whoever thinks, you know. I don't know.
That's, is there if a gray think, area of evil?
If she thinks they're evil, then, you know, then I guess she thinks they're a secret combination. But I don't think gay people are evil.
I absolutely don't think so either.
So according to this, you know, if they're doing O's and they're being evils, then maybe they are secret combinations. We should look into this.
Yeah, there might be secret combinations all over the campus of BYU. You know, it's funny, as I'm reading more further in the wiki article.
Yeah,
right.
Do you know other accusations of secret combinations and
like modern?
Yeah.
What, you mean like gang members? Like,
no.
Like the IRA? Mean,
although gang members could be a good one. IRA could be a good one. Listen
Al-Qaeda.
To this.
Al-Qaeda? Al-Qaeda?
Alleged secret combinations in the modern world is what this
okay.
is called, according
I
to
like
Wikipedia.
This.
During the Cold War, LDS apostle and then prophet of the church, Ezra Taft Benson
mm-hmm.
repeatedly described communism as a secret combination.
Socialism and communism, yeah.
Apostle Bruce R. McConkie claimed that reliable modern reports describe their existence amongst gangsters as part of the governments of communist countries, in some labor organizations, and even in some religious groups. M. Russell Ballard described secret combinations as including, as you pointed out, gangs, drug cartels, and organized crime families. They have secret signs and code words. They participate in secret rites and in initiation ceremonies. Among their purposes are to murder, to plunder, to steal, to commit whoredoms and all manner of wickedness according to the laws of their country and also the laws of God. LDS President Gordon B. Hinckley compared modern terrorists to the Gadianton robbers, mm-hmm. a vicious, oath-bound, and secret organization bent on evil and destruction.
This wiki article is like very Mormon-centered, I guess.
Right.
Because secret combinations is a very Book of Mormon term, I guess. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just funny that this whole wiki article is kind of Mormon-centric.
Right.
Yeah. Also says, Ezra Taft Benson stated in November 1988 edition of The Ensign in an article entitled, I Testify, that a secret combination that seeks to overthrow the freedom of all lands, nations, and countries is increasing its evil influence and control over America and the entire world.
Pirates are evil. They plundered.
Right?
They killed.
For money?
And we should stop having pirate parties with little boys. I'm just saying, you know, it's just like...
No, I
I'm just giving an extreme example, but it's just funny.
We
know?
Did stop, Rob.
Oh, we
My
did?
My family and I, we stopped a long time ago.
We don't observe pirate parties.
We don't do pirate
family.
Parties. They are... That's a party celebrating secret combinations.
Oh, okay.
We also don't watch TV or laugh.
Oh, okay.
So...
We don't celebrate birthdays. We don't celebrate... Wait, Jehovah's Witness?
No, what? No, all we'll right. do a blood transfusion.
Oh, okay. That's good.
That's true.
All right.
So, yeah, a secret combination. Interesting.
No, I don't... I think she used the wrong terminology. I don't think they're there to undermine. I went to East High School, where we were the first high school.
Yeah, you were the one to start the whole thing.
Yeah,
here
we started
in Utah.
The whole thing.
Give a little history
this
for everyone.
This is back in 1996. They started a club called the Gay Straight Alliance.
Right.
Basically a support group for... gay, lesbian, whatever,
mm-hmm.
Students. I don't think we had any transgendered at that time. But so we decided to start this club.
Were you part of it?
I was not, but I had friends who were part of it.
Because
mm-hmm. I don't know. I was in the drama club. That was my gay straight alliance.
Yeah,
right.
So
there's no stereotyping here.
Right.
That's not stereotype if it's true, is it?
No, it's true. I had gay friends in the drama club.
Okay,
yeah.
That's all he was saying.
Sure, yeah.
He wasn't saying that everybody is. Or
right. Anyway, that's how I reached out to those people. You know, that's right. how I became friends with them. But what happened was is the school district said all or none. So they put it up to a vote. Either we accept all clubs or we accept none. And so this is in Salt Lake City School District, which is probably one of the more liberal districts,
mm-hmm.
and it was still voted none. So we got rid of all of our clubs. And so all the schools protested. West High went up
that.
To the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
We had an assembly. It was after one of our, it was either our Freedom Assembly or like our Multicultural Assembly. It's kind of ironic.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody got up on stage and said, all right, guys, we're walking across the street. And everybody just got up out of the assembly and walked across the street.
Did you get up or did you hang out with the theater club at that point?
We all went.
Oh, you all
protest.
Went. Okay.
The whole school.
I'm just making sure you went too.
The faculty as well?
I don't know. I don't remember faculty, but it was more of a protest that this is ridiculous, getting rid of
all
of our
clubs. Just because.
Because one club.
Right.
And then you're going to have some people who are like, oh, the Gay Straight Alliance Club, they ruined it for the rest of us. Whereas I'm on the, we should accept everybody.
Right.
We should accept all clubs. And so this was a huge thing. It went national. And so it's been an ongoing thing for years. And I BYU accepts it. It's you were there for the interview.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it's a ordained, not an ordained club.
It's not, but an official club, allow. It's not an official club, but they allow them to meet on their campus. They know that they're meeting on their campus. I think using the term secret combinations is a misnomer.
Right. So.
You know what I think has been interesting, and I apologize that I've been distracted. So,
are you still reading the article?
Yeah, it's a link from Wikipedia. Yeah. It then goes into Mormon folklore.
So I want to do a whole episode. I was talking to one of my buddies. We want to do Mormon Mythbusters. Either a whole episode
I love it.
Or a section each week.
Okay, then, then I won't spoil this because these are...
Yeah, don't...
There's a bunch of really good ones. Let's do it.
I love
it. So each week we can either highlight a Mormon myth and talk about it, or we can do a whole episode.
No, I think we do a whole episode.
Yeah.
Okay. Because he's a friend of mine, and he works down at the church office. He does histories and records and those type of things. And so we're going to try and start diving into this research.
I love it.
Yeah.
Figure it out. Especially when we want to ask Sister Johnson about the time that the Third Nephite changed her tire.
Right.
When it broke down in the middle of nowhere.
And I couldn't afford a toothbrush. Yeah. And he brought me a toothbrush. Right. And when I turned to say thank you, he was gone.
Exactly.
I thank that Nephite for the toothbrush. I do want to share one of these.
Go ahead.
It's just so interesting. But so, for example, and I think that's a really good point that we should do. Dive in. We should help people out. Go into this. Mm-hmm. For example, did you know that it is a Mormon folklore belief that on December 7th, 1941, tell me what's important about that date.
December 7th?
1941. Bob, do you know what's going on? What is it?
Is that Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. So December 7th, 1941, Japanese aircraft pilots attempted to bomb the La'ie Hawaii Temple just prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, but were prevented from doing so by mechanical failures
or an unseen
protective force.
Rob is so excited about this one right now.
And that the Japanese pilot who attempted to bomb the La'ie Hawaii Temple was converted to the LDS Church after he saw a picture of the temple in the possession of Mormon missionaries in Japan.
Yes! And this is not true.
All I'm going to say is that it's listed under Tales and Popular Beliefs of the Mormon Church.
I've heard
that. What do you want to say about it?
Well, exactly what he said. I was going to tell it verbatim, but that's such a funny story. He's like, it's not opening up. And he's like, oh, well. And then the missionary brings a picture, and he's like, that building, I recognize that building. I tried to bomb it 20 years ago. I'm converted.
And gets converted. So I think that's a great, I love it.
Yeah, so what we'll do is on podcast dime, we'll go to Japan.
Yes.
We'll find
Richie's dime.
If by the podcast dime means you mean that we never want to go.
Right, right.
Yes.
But no, that's one of my more favorite ones that I like.
So we'll have to do that. We'll have to let's call that out. Let's do that as episode 53. Is that easy?
Yep.
I'll write that in the book. Now I have a little black journal book.
And if you have any ideas about Mormon myths that we should discuss, then let us know on Facebook.
Yeah.
Or comment on theculturalhall.com.
We'll put a big post.
53, that's page 53. Doing it right here. Episode 53.
Richie has finally decided to get organized.
Why don't we make it episode 55?
Why?
Like as an area.
50.
That would be 51.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Good job.
Mormon
55. I'm off. I didn't do my math right.
Let's see if there's a myth about something out there about episode 55 being something like that.
All right.
Yeah.
It was prophesied that episode 55.
I can't wait until we get to episode 666.
What?
Wow.
We'll skip it. All right.
Maybe I'll be married by then.
Yeah, maybe. That's a myth.
That's a myth.
All right. Anything else? Anything else that you guys wanted to talk about before we get into this episode with the carnival girl?
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, let me just talk a couple more things before, because I feel like it's necessary. Remember, you can find us online at theculturalhall.com. With that, there are a lot of people who don't understand what a podcast is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So help educate your friends who may not understand what a podcast is.
Or your mom.
Or your mom.
Your grandma.
Your grandma. Grandpas. Men like the podcast too.
But even young people like us. I have a lot of friends who have no idea what a podcast is.
They're like, that's so great you do that.
What is that?
Yeah. I got married at 19. What's a Twitter? You know?
Now, Rob.
Sorry, hey. I'm just saying.
Robert.
I just have friends who got married.
Do you want to
really
apologize to the people who got married at the age of 19 right now, or do you want the hate mail to come?
I'm just saying. I have lots of friends that got married early, and they don't see the value of Facebook or social networking.
Maybe they're just trying to be safe. Maybe they're just safeguarding their marriages.
I guess so.
Possibility.
But I just find it funny that, you know, it's like it's passed them by. Like, yeah. Facebook, that's not for me.
No, I don't need that.
I'm married. Like, you know, it'd be fun to actually see you.
What do you think, Bob? Do you have a Facebook page?
Yeah.
Bob has a Facebook.
And Bob's 45. How old are you, Bob? We should introduce Bob as Bob's the guy who lets us use this room.
Right.
Yeah. We're just like in his front room of his house.
Yeah. Thanks for letting us park in the driveway this week, Bob.
We'll mow your lawn next week.
I'll bring my weed whacker.
I'll clean up your bathroom later.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's
good job.
That's bold.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
I'll play Wii with your kids.
He's starting to lose his hair, so you know that drain is going to be stuck with old man hair.
Do you see how
offense,
long
Bob.
My hair is?
No offense, Bob. Yeah, gross. I got to tell you this. This has nothing to do with the cultural hall at all, but women, if your men clean out the drain of the shower.
My man doesn't.
If that man does, or if your wife does, gentlemen, give that person the hug and the respect that they need for cleaning that out. That is the grossest thing I've ever done.
Husband, are you listening to this? I clean out the drain.
Okay, so I would make a deal with my wife.
Uh-huh.
Saying it.
Fictitiously.
Right, fictitiously. I would let her clean out the drain and I would clean the toilet.
What?
You can't do the drain?
That's a good husband.
But no, I'm just saying.
He's making a compromise.
Compromise. Oh, like I would do the toilet. She will do the drain.
The toilet has to be done every week.
I do
the
toilets and I do the drains.
Oh.
But my husband does a lot around the house. Right. He really does. But not the drains.
Is it just because it makes him sick?
It's my hair. It's like disgusting. It's really long.
I'll clean the toilet, but not the baby's diaper.
And you're not married.
Oh.
Because he hates young people.
I like kids beyond the age of one.
Really?
That whole baby stage is just awkward.
No, they're just boring. That's my problem. What do they do? They sleep and eat. Great. Yeah. If I slept and ate, you wouldn't think I was so cute and want to hold me all the time.
Oh, I held you. You puked on me. Great.
Great.
You guys are awesome.
What is it different?
What? When it's your own, absolutely.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Yes.
Sigh.
I like being an uncle.
I'm the best uncle ever.
I'm best.
Hand it back over. Okay, so theculturalhall.com. You can also review the podcast. I would hope that you would do so. Go to iTunes and do a review. Or that you can always post comments at theculturalhall.com. Find us on Facebook and like us. And tell your friends to like us as well. That all being part of, you know, the idea of kind of sharing the podcast with everyone. We've had a lot of people that have come into the podcast recently, into the hall. That's right. What I've started calling it, coming into the hall.
Coming into the hall, right.
And I hope that you'll help other people if you feel like it's of value, that you'll share it with other people. So that being said, also follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. And I think that's it. Oh, I should say this. One last thing.
Yes.
If you're interested in advertising on The Cultural Hall, Rob, I know you did in the past.
Yeah.
And we have great sponsors in Sidewinder Media and also in Lennon Design, who do all the graphics for the website. Send us an email to richie@theculturalhall.com or just contact us at theculturalhall.com. Let us know a little bit about your business. Hopefully it'll be a great fit and we can do something for you.
That's right.
Coming back in the second and third block, it's Sonia Herbert, author of the book The Carnival Girl. That's back here in just a minute.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. 576 to book your shoot today.
It's the second block of the Cultural Hall, and joining us here is Sonia Herbert. And you may not recognize this name, but I got to tell you how this interview came about. So I was playing around on Facebook, as I do far too often,
sure.
as my wife will tell you. And you know, occasionally on the right hand side, because they know the kinds of things that I search. And Google and also Facebook knows the
which is
kind of
creepy.
Yeah, which is really creepy, and that's a whole discussion for another time. It pops up this book called Carnival Girl, And I was like, that I don't even understand what that could possibly mean. So it, and then it had a brief little encapsulation about a woman who survived the Third Reich, or escaped from the Third Reich in the carnival. And I said, I don't even get the scope from that. So then I clicked on it, and I come to find out that Sonia Herbert was the one who wrote this book about her mom. And Sonia, you're a member of the LDS Church.
I sure am.
And so I've got this little bio, which will serve as a start here. But then I want to hear all about this, because I just think it's fascinating. I don't want to spoil the book, but I certainly want to give people a good idea of what it's about and about your story. So here's this, which I found at germanwriter.com.
Yep.
It says, Sonia's unusual life began in post-World War II Germany in a traveling circus. As a child, Sonia developed a strong faith in Christ, which eventually brought her away from the carnival circuit and into a church. Also, when Sonia was young, she decided to one day write her mother's story, the story of a half-Jewish young woman who survived the Nazis. It took her many years until after she immigrated to the United States, got married, divorced, and remarried, raised most of her six children before she made that promise come true. And that's what brings you here with us. So right. Thank you for being here with us, Sonia.
Oh, you're so welcome.
So I don't even know necessarily where to begin. Let's
start from the beginning. You were born while your mom was in the circus?
Yes. My mom hid in the circus for several years during the Second World War in Germany. She's half Jewish, and she's very obviously half Jewish. She's got black hair and black eyes. By the way, my mom is still alive. She lives in Stuttgart, and she is now 92 years old and going strong.
Wow. Really?
Yes, and that's she told amazing. Me once that if she could just survive the war, she'd be so happy. And she said, I never thought I'd make it that far.
To 92. So yes. So she, how old was she when the Holocaust kind of began? And she
was 13 when Hitler ascended to power, and she was 18 or 19 when she went away to the circus and didn't tell anybody about it. And eventually she ended up in a small circus, a Polish circus that was taken over by the Nazis. And the original Polish owner of the circus saw her and fell in love with her. And there was some trouble with the Nazis. But eventually, since the war was almost over, they got together. The first baby died.
Oh, they got together like married? Or they?
Well, she couldn't get married. She was half Jewish.
Uh-huh. Right.
So her first baby died right after birth. Too premature, no food, terrible situation. And she was 6 months pregnant with my older sister when she finally could get married. The war was over. It was permitted again for anyone to be able to be married. And that's the first thing they did, is get married. Mm-hmm. And I'm the second child. I was also born in the circus, but by the time I was born, the circus was very badly foundering. There was no money. The animals were either eaten or died of starvation.
Oh,
and we had a galloping inflation right after the war. So the German government gave everybody a certain amount of money to start all over, and my father decided to take that opportunity. Since he never wanted to work for somebody, and actually he is an artist, he was a very good violinist.
Oh, really?
But he couldn't make a living with that at that time either, so he decided to open up a little carnival. He bought with his money a merry-go-round type attraction, mm-hmm. and with some leftover money and leftover boards, he built a little shooting gallery.
Oh, cool.
And with that, we traveled most of my childhood from one tiny little German town to another. My father carefully stayed right in the center of Germany, because that's where the food was, where the farmers were, mm-hmm. where he could survive better. And also, that was the area that wasn't quite as anti-Jewish as the large cities.
So how did your mom get the idea, being a young half Jewish girl, to join the carnival, to join the circus, because to me, it doesn't seem like something that you go, all right, well, here comes the Nazis, and they're obviously not going to be very happy with me. You know what I'm going to do?
Join the circus.
I'm going to join the circus.
Well, it was actually, I feel like it was the hand of God guiding her, but she's never seen that, and she still can't see it. But she was walking along the street one day, wondering what would become of her. She had just lost her other job. First, she was a model in a very fancy fashion house. She lost that job on Kristallnacht when the Nazis destroyed all Jewish stores because that was a Jewish store.
Oh, really?
And the new owners...
So for those who aren't familiar, because I'm certainly not very familiar, there was a time when they just came in and said, all Jewish stores, you're done and destroyed them?
Kristallnacht was the night of the broken glass when the Nazis were carefully firing up in the German population an anti-Jewish sentiment. And the Nazis were behind it. They were pushing people to go to the Jewish stores and break in their windows and steal their stuff. Mm. And at the same time, that night, many of the Jewish family disappeared. Mm. And so did my mother's boss disappeared that night. And when she came back a week later to work, the store was in the hands of a Nazi. And he kept her just a few days and told her he couldn't use her any longer. Since she was half Jewish, she was still partly protected at that time. So she found another job, and she lost that one within months for a similar reason. Mm-hmm. And she thought she needed to... She lived in Berlin. Mm-hmm. Where anti-Semitism was very strong. And she thought, I need to get out of here. I need to get out of here. She actually turned to her Lutheran pastor. Her mother was Lutheran. Mm-hmm. Her Jewish father had died. Luckily, he didn't have to live through that.
Right.
So she went to the pastor, and he told her, well, I'm sorry, you have to be obedient to the powers that be, and that's all I can do for you. And that was the day when she swore she would never... believe in God again or go in any church and always rely on herself. And that was also the day when she saw that colored poster on the wall. Uh-huh. The circus is in town. And she was looking at that poster and she thought, oh, how nice it would be to be in the circus. And she was looking again and saw a little notice tucked on the button where it says, cashier wanted.
So she was a cashier.
She applied. The circus owner was very... anti-Nazi, mm-hmm. even though she wasn't quite what he was looking for, what she was looking for. The owner was a woman.
Right.
She hired my mother. Mm-hmm. And so she stayed in that circus for several years. And then when things were getting really bad, she got a new cashier job, ticket seller, ticket taker.
Right.
And at a little small Polish circus. And mm-hmm. that's where she met my father, who was the original owner of that circus. When the war was over, the Nazis were gone. The Nazis that had appropriated the circus gave it back to my father. But by that time, the damage was done. The animals were dead. The families were starving. So my father built a carnival.
What are some of your earliest memories of, I guess, just of your life? What do you first remember of your mom, of your dad, of the traveling around?
Oh, the very earliest I remember when my mother's small little sister came. That's actually in the book. The book is a memoir of my childhood.
Okay.
So I must have, before that, I remember being in the orphanage. My mother was pregnant with her fourth child, and the doctor, she had a kidney infection, and the doctor told her she would die. Mm-hmm. And he was willing to perform an abortion, but in spite of everything, my mother said, no, I can't do that. It's too late. Mm-hmm. So we were sent to the orphanage because my father had to make a living somehow, mm-hmm. and my mother's family has no more contact with my mama at that time. And there are different reasons for that, too.
So I'm trying to understand. So you guys got sent to an orphanage, though you knew where your parents were.
Yeah. My older sister, me, and my younger sister, she's a year younger than me. And I must have been 3 years or so. But I remember it very faintly, being in the orphanage, because it was very traumatic.
And it was so your dad could go and work.
I mean,
the intention was...
He came to visit, but that's all he could do.
So the orphanage is just essentially, because when I think of orphanage, I think of mom and dad passed away, and then you go to the orphanage.
No, it was kind of like a holding tank for us. Oh. Mm-hmm. We didn't know. My daddy didn't know if my mother would survive.
Right.
And he needed to have a place for us. His family had gone back to Poland. My mother's family was estranged of her. They had nobody.
Yeah.
So the nuns took us in for however long it took, and luckily it only took a few weeks. She was okay. And we came back. That's my very earliest memory.
What was it that she had with her kidneys?
I don't know for sure. It's some kind of a kidney infection.
Just something pretty bad?
It must have been pretty bad.
But you remember the orphanage because it was traumatic?
Yes, it was traumatic.
Was it traumatic because your family wasn't there, or were you mistreated?
I don't really know if you can call it mistreated, but yeah, those nuns were completely overworked. It was a Catholic thing.
Mm.
And they were harsh and unloving. And I remember my little sister, my 1 year little sister, she must have been 2, sitting on the potty the whole day long. And I just felt so sorry for her that she couldn't get up. Hmm. And something else also happened, but that's in my book.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So my next memory from the carnival was when my mother's sister came to visit.
Okay.
And that was maybe a year or so later. My brother was already born, but he was still a baby. And she was kind of cruel to us, and my mother finally sent her back home. Hmm. Yeah.
How the book has been out for how long?
It hasn't been out yet. It will be out in June.
Out in June. Okay. Uh-huh. How has the idea of you putting together this memoir? You say in your dedication to the book that, you know, you've always wanted to do this, to share your mother's story. How have your siblings been about it, and do they see it as a very similar story, or do they say, oh, you know, that's just Sonia's interpretation, that's not really how things were?
Right.
Or what's kind of their feedback?
I have 3 sisters and 2 brothers, all of them in Germany, and one of them pretty fluent in English, and she loves it. But she's the youngest sister. She was born when I was already 8, so she doesn't remember quite as much of the carnival as I do. My oldest sister doesn't speak English well enough to read it. And nobody says it wasn't that way. They know it was that way.
And your mom has been supportive of you writing this memoir?
Oh, very much so. My mom is not only very pragmatic, but she is. She likes to be in the limelight.
Oh,
I think
good.
I inherited that from her.
So, do you relate to that?
No, I don't relate to that one. I mean, I love the dedication, because you say this is something that just needs to be shared. What is it about the story of your mother that you feel like needs to be shared?
My mother is a survivor, and she doesn't even see herself as a survivor. Mm-hmm. My mother is a determined, strong, pragmatic kind of woman. But all she sees, and it's deep in there, and she never says it, but all she sees is that she's inferior, because that was drummed into her from childhood. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's right or fair. She's 92 years old, and she still doesn't feel as good as anybody else on the world. That's not right.
What do you think? Is it, do you think, just because of the anti-Semitism at the time of when she, in her that's the word I'm looking for, impressionable years? You think that that's where that stems from, or are there other things?
There are other things too, but that's a big one. The fact that she was half Jewish, and it was rubbed into her. Her sister wasn't half Jewish. She had a different father.
Yeah.
And also her mother was kind of abusive, physically and mentally abusive.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And she never quite got over that.
You said she kind of made a promise that she was never going to believe in God again.
Yes.
Is she an atheist?
She's still an atheist.
Is she?
She sometimes wonders if maybe the Far Eastern religions might be right, and she would be reborn as something or somebody else. And that's as far as she goes.
Oh, wow.
How does that resound with you?
I've never felt that way my whole life. I have never felt that way.
Really, your whole life?
My whole life. But I once asked her, then you don't have to worry about having to die, because eventually we all die. And then she says, what do you mean? I've lived a good life, the best I could. And you could shine through there, that deep inside. She even feels that God is disapproving of her.
Really?
Yeah. So she'd rather not believe in a God than believe in a God who would disapprove of her.
Hmm. Well, coming back in the third block, we want to talk about how it is that you came to be a Mormon person, and then talk about kind of some of the background behind the book, and then maybe what's coming up for you in the future. So that'll be coming up here in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's the third block of the Cultural Hall, and visiting us here is Sonia Herbert, who is the author of Carnival Girl. Have you written any other books?
I'm actually writing a book right now about my mother's life, the way she, how she found the circus and how she was hiding away, but it hasn't been accepted for publication yet.
Okay, so this one, the memoir that you write now, is just about your...
It's just about my childhood.
Your
and,
childhood.
And actually, my belief in God runs like a red thread all the way through it.
Okay. Hmm. And who is publishing this book?
It's Cedar Fort.
Cool.
Okay.
So you can get it probably at all the typical locations, I would imagine, your
yes.
Deseret book,
mm-hmm.
and you can get it online yes. by searching Carnival Girl.
Most certainly.
So let's go there. We teased that we wanted to find out how it is that you came to be a Mormon, member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So raised Carnival, not in the United States, over in Germany. So how did this happen? How is it that you're here as a Mormon person?
I think it started when I was 7 years old, when my sister told me that there was a person named Jesus who lived in heaven and loved everybody. And that was something I really needed, someone to love me, because I kind of, with four children and a tiny little caravan home, my mother did not have a lot of love to go around.
Right.
And I needed someone to love. And the next thing happened just a few months later, I had a vision when I woke up at night terrified of a bad dream, and I was too afraid to go tell my mother about it. I had this vision of this hand coming over my head and the warmest, lightest feeling just mm-hmm. streaming all to my body, and the bad dreams disappeared. Hmm. That stayed with me for a long time. And when I was 14, my mother was getting very unhappy with the whole situation and eventually told my father she wasn't going to travel anymore, not with three teenage daughters.
So we were you pretty well can't behaved imagine teenage
why.
Daughters?
We were, yeah.
My Did mother, you have to be?
Yes, we had to be. My mother was intimidating enough that we were well behaved.
Yeah.
So for 1 year, we stayed on this carnival place in that little town where we lived in our caravan, because we couldn't get an apartment. And that winter, my sisters and I went just to get out of my mother's hair, went out wandering around town. When I saw this thing in the window, it's almost like my mother seeing the circus advertisement. Mm-hmm. I saw this advertisement of two Americans teaching English for free. And
oh, really?
I said, hey, that's for free. And my sister says, yes, let's go. And that's how I met the Mormon missionaries. And almost at the end of that night, almost instantly, I knew that the church was true. When they started talking about Joseph Smith having had a vision, I thought, yes, I had a vision too. That makes perfect sense. So eventually, the missionaries talked to me. My sisters lost interest again, didn't go back, mm-hmm. but I kept going back. And eventually, they talked to me, wondering where I was living, because they have these little signs where you write your address on it.
Right.
But we didn't. We just wrote our post office box number because we didn't have an address.
Sure.
So they walked me home and they asked my parents if they would be interested in hearing more about the church. I lied and I told them they would be because I didn't want them to go away.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And my parents.
Oh, yeah, they'd be really interested. Come home.
Yeah, and my mother just really went all over them about how can you be so dumb as believe in a God? And my father very politely, I'm a good Catholic. I don't need another church. Uh-huh. And then one of the missionaries probably was inspired because he asked if they could teach me. Uh-huh. And my parents said, if she wants to, why not?
So they gave you the choice?
Yes, they did. They did. They always gave us a choice. Actually, they had to give me the choice because by law in Germany, when you're 15, you can choose your own religion.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Hmm.
Is that still, do you know if that's still the case now?
I'm sure it is.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yes. By that time, my father had found a small carnival caravan, a smaller mm. caravan for his daughters, and that was the place where the missionaries came mm. and taught me the lessons.
But you said your sisters kind of lost interest in it. Did you ever try and be like, no, come on, come back, don't you get... Was there that kind of urging with your sisters, or did you just say, all right, you guys get to choose, I get to choose?
Yes, like that, because I felt that my sisters would just make fun of me if I would urge them or mm-hmm. tell
about
them more
what?
About it. Because the way my family looks at religion is like stupid people go to have religion, go to church.
Right.
Smart people don't do that. They know better.
Mm-hmm.
So me being interested in religion automatically meant to my sisters that I was stupid. Mm. And I hated that, so I just left it alone.
How do you justify that? Because you're not stupid.
Right.
And people who believe, I mean, how do you justify that in your mind?
At that time, I didn't even know I wasn't stupid. I quit school after 8 years because that's what we did. But I knew that there was a God, and I knew he loved me, and I had a vision on how can I not follow that, especially when you're 15 and you want to rebel against your family anyway. That helped. So I stuck with it. I waited not a year before I asked my mother if I could be baptized because I was so intimidated by her, but eventually I did.
And did she just say yes when you went and asked her?
By that time, she had confronted my father with the divorce, and she says, might as well get baptized. There's nothing he can say about it now. She used that as a tool.
Oh, I see.
In the divorce.
So it wasn't a personal, it wasn't anything that she felt personally. She just, it was almost vindictive to
Toward she
your
used it
dad.
As a tool. If my father would throw a fit about it, then she could use that in the divorce proceeding, especially since I was of age to choose my own
which
religion.
I guess worked out in your favor.
Yes, it did. God's hand again.
Yep. Did she come to your baptism?
No, nobody even knew that I was baptized.
Oh,
I
really?
Went all by myself.
Even though you had obtained permission, you just kind of went and did it?
Yes, I just didn't want to draw any attention to my religious side of me, to the religious side of me. It was best if I just left that alone or I would get teased. Mm-hmm. And I did get teased.
So what was the baptism like? What do you remember?
There was
about
another
it?
Family, family bank. They had two teenagers, a mother and father, and a little girl. And they and I and the missionaries, I think we went in two cars, and I went with the banks in their car. And I remember it well. I remember that there was a real meeting house there. They didn't meet in a school like in my hometown. And I remember going down in the water, being surprised it was warm. And I remember being baptized and feeling brand new when I came up.
So being a young person, though, I mean, that's a pretty big decision. You're 16, right, when you're baptized, if I followed it right.
Right.
I mean, that's, you're not, you know, it's not like some of us who get baptized at 8 and we go, sure. I mean, and that's the age of accountability, and that's a whole different discussion for another time. But you're consciously making the decision to do it. Then what? I mean, you get done being baptized. It's something that you'd wanted for a couple of years. You've been learning about it. So what?
Oh, I was so determined to do right and to have God be proud of me. If there was nobody else, God would be proud of me. I made friends quickly and easily. There was two other young girls in the area where I lived who were LDS. And that's what I did. That was my life. Go to church, go to meetings, go to little outings with the missionaries and talk about the church.
And did they have any organizations for youth when you were that age? I mean, they have young women's now, but I'm assuming they didn't then.
No, we actually had a sort of primary where almost everybody went to because there were so few of us. So we all did primary together. And I remember the last year I was there, I was teaching Relief Society and I must have been 17.
Oh, and you were teaching?
So, yeah.
Wow.
So then what made you leave?
I went on a mission. Also in Germany, by that time, my mother had found an apartment and we didn't live in the carnival anymore. I went on and fulfilled a 2-year and 1-month mission.
On a how long? I'm sorry?
2 years and 1 month.
Oh, 2 years and 1 month. How come? Now, normally it's 18 months.
Yeah,
was
right.
it different?
At that time, it was still 2 years for the girls and I had a month extension.
Good for you. So you liked it?
I started a month earlier, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they needed a sister.
Wow.
Did you find your experiences an opportunity to be able to share and kind of inspire other people as you served your mission?
Oh, yes. It was a hard job and it was a cold job in the winter in Germany, yes. But just seeing people's lives change because I brought them something that I knew in my heart was true, that was very rewarding. And actually, the Germans are kind of stubborn, and I think it's still a leftover, or it was at that time still a leftover from the Nazis. They do not believe in religion, or they look down on religion. So it was a great thing when we found someone who would listen and who would resonate with the spirit.
Is there a particular, like, favorite experience from your mission that you'd be willing to share with us, or something that Yeah. Just impacted you?
Yeah, actually, I went back to my to the town where I was born in as a missionary. Years later, I don't even remember that place because I was born during the circus travels. So I came back on my mission, and I went. I had a really sweet missionary companion, and she and I, we went to the newspaper, and we had a little big write-up about the missionary sisters, the one sister who was born in this town, returning. Mm-hmm. And we actually tracked it out, a father, mother, and a son who were almost golden contacts, almost instantly believed what we told them. Mm-hmm. I'm still in contact with that son who is an adult.
Cool. And if they did they go on to get sealed in the temple and that kind of?
As far as I know, they did. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And you're still in contact with him?
Yeah, and he's still in the church.
Oh, nice.
So after your mission, when did you decide to come to the States?
After my mission, I moved to Frankfurt to get away from my family and to be in a larger LDS community. And on the very first Sunday there, this young man stood next to me at the heaters, at the radiators, because it was cold. Mm-hmm. And this old guy comes up to us and he talks to this young man. He says, "Is she your wife?" And he looks at me and he says, "No." And then he started talking to me. We never saw that old guy again, but we got married. And he was an American soldier, and I followed him to Colorado and then to Utah.
Really?
Yeah.
No, he's not. Well, maybe he could be. He should be my husband, as a matter of fact. How long did you guys date for? Pretty quick?
We met in the thick of winter, I think right in January, right after Christmas, and we got married in August.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So even in Germany, they get it done pretty quick.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, if you're a Mormon,
that's what you do. It's just the culture.
Yeah.
How different was it for you to come from Germany, where things are so constricted, especially as far as things as religion and things like that, to come here to the United States, where it's like, whatever.
I don't think I had any culture shock at all. I was lonely for the language, and I had a hard time understanding things in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But from the moment I set foot on American soil, I was happy to be here. I felt more accepted. I felt less defensive. And it was just a good place to be. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, when I moved from Utah to Oregon, 10-12 years ago, I had culture shock then.
Really? Why in Oregon?
Because it's so different there. Yeah.
So, you know, you come to the United States and it's, you know, it's kind of a different thing, and you're now kind of established in your faith as far as being a Mormon person. Do you notice any differences between the church in Germany and the church here? Obviously, there's more people here in the United States than in Germany, but besides just sheer number, do you notice a difference culturally or anything
like
that?
Yeah, it has to be different. The numbers are so small in Germany. When I was a teenager there, the LDS people tended to be very fanatic and strict. It's not so much that way anymore. My husband and I just spent 2 years in Germany.
What were you doing in Germany back?
Now with the advent of the internet and all that cool stuff we have now, we just packed up our stuff and we're both self-employed, so we both did our work from Germany.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wow.
Spent 2 years there, get back in touch with my sisters, who are a little bit older and a little bit less judgmental now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the LDS people, they are a little bit more international now, even in Europe. And yes, their own culture often plays into what they're doing and how they're doing it. Like, for example, you don't get green, yellow with carrot stripes.
Oh, sure. Well, they're not missing out much. Yeah. So we talked briefly about your relationship with your mom, but during the break we were talking about how you started writing this memoir to kind of deal with the relationship with your mom. You're very different.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah, I think I'm absolutely opposite of my mother. Actually, my mother had a name for me when I was young. She called me the stupid one.
Really?
Yeah, and for the longest time I thought I was, but I'm not. I have a master's degree now in English.
So take that, mom. Take that.
But my mother being very pragmatic and very atheistic, I'm very positive and very religious. Mm-hmm. And that was often a problem. And I admire my mother a lot for what she's done in her life and what she has accomplished, and she can't even see what she has accomplished. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, I felt a lot of resentment toward my mother for her inability to show any love or caring to her children. Hmm. And actually, I started writing the memoir just to come to grips with my conflicting feelings about her. So each one of the chapters in the book starts with a little piece about my mother and me when she came visiting me a few years back here in America. Hmm.
Have you ever tried to share the gospel with your mom?
Yes, but that's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm. How did it go? So is it just, hey, mom, there's this Book of Mormon. Night.
Yes. no, don't even come with this stuff. You know, I know better than that.
Oh, right.
So and she means you know better than that.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How was the, you have children yourself.
Yes, I do.
How is the relationship with your mother changed? How has it taught you or helped you or coached you in your relationship with your children?
I had to learn. One of my daughters finally taught me how to hug children.
Really?
She insisted, and suddenly I realized I'm just not wanting to hug my kids because that's what my mother did. Mm-hmm. And so I made a conscious effort to hug my kids, and it worked.
Yeah? Just the physical action of hugging was something that your mother had never done and you had to learn.
Right, right. Somehow it seemed to, even to say I love you, I still can't do that in German. I have to do it in English. It seemed like somehow dirty words because that was never spoken in our family. You just didn't say that.
I'm just kind of fascinated by that. It's just such, it seems such a contrary thing to the gospel where everything seems to be love and, hey, I love you. And,
yes.
You know, let's look forward to our life together and being supportive and, kind of just absolutely counter. That's awesome. I think that speaks volumes about you as a person to be able to come from that, but not dwell in your circumstances and be able to not only find the gospel and everything that's great about the gospel, but just as a person, be able to develop from where you came from.
I've mm-hmm. been very blessed. I really have. I see God's hands in everything I do.
How many children do you have?
I have six.
You have
Holy
six
cow.
Children.
How do you have time to write a book?
They're all big now.
Oh, so now you got plenty of time. So you can avoid your husband by writing the book.
Well, that's my social life. It's my kids.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing about being I assume grandma.
Yes, yeah. I just had another little granddaughter.
What's your favorite part about being a grandma?
That you can send them back. Yeah. Oh, I just love them. I think I'm a lot more patient than I was as a mother. And I learned that too from my children, mm-hmm. to be more patient.
Well, we only have just another minute with you. So we want to ask you, what do you have a calling right now in your ward?
Oh, yeah. My husband and I, we are the librarians. We go on adventures. No, not really. But it's a wonderful calling because we have, together we have 11 children. And we have 5 in this area and 4 in Oregon, 1 in Texas and 1 in Arizona. So we're very often traveling. And mm-hmm. being the librarian is a really good job for people that aren't always at church.
Right.
Okay. If you could pick a calling, what calling would you pick?
I always wanted to teach literacy to people that haven't had a chance to learn to read and write or to go to school, because I remember that from my own childhood. And if I could do a literacy mission, I would love that. Or otherwise...
Do you have plans to serve a mission with your husband?
Maybe one day, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or otherwise, I would work with children, because children are so important.
What age?
I like the... 6, 7, 8 year olds, but I would work with teenagers too.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's pretty bold. I've
yeah,
got
it
a
is.
Teenager.
I've had 6.
Yeah. And then finally, what is your favorite part of your faith?
I think the feeling of love. I know God loves me, and it freed me to also allow myself to love myself. It took many years, but I finally learned God wouldn't disapprove whatever I do. He would love me anyway. So it was okay to be loved. Hmm. Between God and my 6 children, I finally learned that lesson.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, your book, Carnival Girl. People can get it at Deseret Book when it comes out. People can get it online when it comes out. Mm-hmm. If people wanted to get in touch with you, how would they get in touch with you?
Oh, just go to germanwriter.com.
And there's a contact there. They can
right,
send you an
everything's
email.
Everything's there.
Are you on Facebook?
I'm on Facebook and German Writer, I think.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also on Blogspot, germanwriter.blogspot.com.
All right. Thank you very much for being with us, Sonia. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And when the time comes, you will travel home safely.
If you were not healthy enough to listen to this podcast this week, that you, in fact, will be healthy enough to listen next week. And in the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you
on the back row
of the cultural hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.